Are you ready to experience the rich interconnection of spirituality, orientation, and identity? If so, plan to attend Liberating Your Divine Identity, a retreat at Unity Village during Pride Month, June 9th to the 12th. This soul-filled retreat is facilitated by LGBTQIA+ Unity Ministers, with workshops and ceremonies to cultivate a deeper awareness of our spiritual nature. Register at unityvillage.org/IAmDivine2022.
Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Welcome to World Spirituality, exploring the unity within all cultures and faith traditions with Paul John Roach, minister of Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas. Discover the universal principles present in all the world's religions and take an incredible journey to new understanding. Now, here is your host, Paul John Roach.
So hello and welcome to World Spirituality on the Unity Online Radio Network. I'm your host, Paul John Rhodes, coming to you from an absolutely beautiful day in Fort Worth, Texas. I'm here at Unity Fort Worth. It's one of those blue fall days that we all look forward to. Such a beautiful time of the year. Today, I welcome to the show the author of a new book of possibility. It's entitled Woman Most Wild, Three Keys to Liberating the Witch Within. And perhaps this is especially apropos right now as the show is airing live during the Halloween season. There we go. Danielle Dulski is an artist, teacher, and writer, and activist for wild women, spirituality, and the divine feminine. She leads women's circles, witchcraft workshops, yoga trainings, and energy healings. And so it's a pleasure to welcome Danielle to today's show. Glad you're with us.
Thank you, Paul John. Very happy to be here.
So here I am. Okay, I'm a man reading and talking about this book, which is called Woman Most Wild. Is that okay?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Please, more men talk about it. That would be awesome.
Because this isn't just about women, is it? It's about harnessing your wildness in a deep sense, and that could apply to masculine side of things as well. And my understanding from the book, it's again about the integration of male and female. So, I think the specific focus is towards the female, right?
Right. It's more about the feminine than gender. So I think that, regardless of whether you identify as male or female or anything in between or above and below, it's about harvesting aspects of the feminine that have been oppressed in society. So, reverence for the earth, honoring our cyclical nature in terms of emotions, and then also sensuality, spirituality, sacred work, all of that. And so, this idea of wildness, I look at it as feminine, but I don't think that you need to. I don't think that you have to label it as masculine and feminine, because really it's just those parts of society that have been oppressed that we need now more than ever to harvest and integrate in our own lives so that they can be reflected in the global community.
Right, exactly. And some of us have misconceptions about what wild means too. It's perceived as out of control or something. You mentioned a wild child or something, but wild really is it has a deeper sense, doesn't it? It's living more spontaneously, closer to the earth, in touch with the energies within our bodies and our souls, really, that we've lost touch with. It's very apropos right now, in terms of where we are in the West, particularly in the States, in terms of harassment of women, the denigration of women in general. And so this book calls for women to step forth into their integrity. And my goodness, I think we need that. And I was looking on Facebook today, and there was a little picture, and it had this huge, huge book, and it said, Understanding Women Volume 1, you know, which is pretty sexist, you know. I can see the funny part of it because, you know, women are, you know, famously inscrutable or whatever, but of course all human beings are inscrutable. But then I put a comment underneath it, you know, and I said, you know, understanding man is only a small little tacky pamphlet, you know, compared, because men's motivations are pretty clear. Women are a lot more mysterious, right? But really what we're talking about is the not just male or female, we're talking about the mystery that we all are, right? When we're existing from our surface, you know, from the gender roles that we're placed into and the societal roles that are foisted on us, then it becomes tacky. But when you go deep into these things, I noticed you've got a quote from Bill Plotkin. I love Bill's work, and he's the author of Soulcraft, but also Wild Minds, you know. So it sort of links in with what you're talking about too, doesn't it? This idea that we have this amazing psyche and this amazing wisdom mind that cannot be domesticated.
Yeah, it's I love Bill Plotkin's work too, because he talks about how we are just fundamentally of the earth. And so that's a big part of witchcraft. It's an earth-based religion. So we are of the earth, right? And the more that we deny that, the more that we deny our wildness, then the farther and farther we get away from, like, the inherent truth, really, of everything. And, you know, the feminine, women's connection to the earth is, to me, a little bit closer. So when we denigrate the earth in all of the ways that we do as human beings, we are also denigrating the female body. And so there is, I think, this kind of amazing parallel right now of all of these women stepping forward and calling out sexual harassment, and then also the earth kind of rising up in all of these different ways to you know, reclaim her power or to show us her power, or to bring back the balance.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and balance is the key word here, isn't it? I mean, we've created this terrible imbalance, obviously, and it's reflected in Gaia, in, you know, in Mother Nature, you know, responding and it, almost like attacking human beings, if you like, because the balance must be redressed. And it seems like we've gone to extremes in our society. You know, we've got, on the one hand, you've got this buttoned-down, overly controlling side of us, and then the other side is where we are, you know, drug and alcohol infused partying, you know, and so you've got this this very prurient side and then this very puritanical side, and neither of them serve us well, right? Because it's not about really contacting the integrity that we truly are, you know, and it's beyond just mindless partying or being totally in control, right? Wildness is very sacred, I think. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's constantly shifting. So you're right. Like, you know, we have these times in our lives when we're called to kind of relish this pleasure planet that we're living on, and we do that in ways that doesn't necessarily serve us. And then we have these other times in our lives when we're called, you know, kind of upward, more of an ascent towards spirit. Which can cause us to completely, you know, ignore the needs of the body and selfhood. So you know, witchcraft is kind of this interesting spiritual path where, on the one hand, you know, we're trying to kind of reclaim this fierce feminine autonomy through spellcraft and activism and all of that. But on the other hand, it requires this humility where we realize that we are just these tiny little cells on this great system that is Gaia, as you called her. But then also, you know, this tiny planet in this great spiraling galaxy, which is this tiny galaxy in this great universe. So, you know, we're trying to kind of wield our spirituality with all of this sense of significance, but then at the same time realize that we are just fundamentally insignificant. So,
right, yeah, the universe is full of conundrums, isn't it, and paradoxes, and, you know, we're both at the center of it, in a sense, because, you know, there is no time or space to spirit. We're at the center of it, and yet we're also totally insignificant, you know, that we're nothing and everything, and That's hard to get your head around sometimes. In fact, you can't get your head around it. This is the whole point, isn't it? Wild is beyond head knowledge, right? Wild is entering into the intuitive, the visceral, the deep down within us.
Right, exactly. There's like an intentional surrender to honoring your wildness. And that idea that to be wild is to be like out of control or emotionally immature or whatever, I think that comes from our society's need to control and predict everything. So when anyone, whether it's a woman or a child or a man, whatever, kind of acts out of character, or that's how we define it, like, oh, that's not like you, that's out of character. That's us kind of taking their right to be wild away. And nature is never static. And we have this completely dynamic nature about us, where our so much about us cycles all the time, including our call toward the spiritual and the soulful. And the more we honor that, I think the more we'll be able to honor the earth and return to the sense of reverence for the seasons and for the elements.
I just came back from a 10-week sabbatical and spent a lot of the time in Scotland. And, I find that in Europe in general, there's not the endless desolation of things that we find in America. I don't know what happened after the Second World War, but, we cover up all huge areas with junk strip, with endless developments of Walmart and fast food stores and everything. And there's nothing wrong with those things, but why do they have to spread out, over the whole landscape? I just don't understand that. It's all about convenience, I guess. It's all about, the car culture. But in Europe, which has just as large a population, they seem to be able to live quite happily without having to despoil everything. And I'm amazed how, you don't miss it. I mean, you definitely, feel bad when you come back, because it's like, oh, my goodness, do we need all these billboards and all this endless development? There's got to be a better way.
Yeah, I hear you. I was in England over the summer for a couple of weeks, and I noticed the same thing. How you just kind of learn that you have to go a little bit further to get things.
Right. Well, that's true.
It's not that bad.
Yeah. Well, that's the other side of it, isn't it? Yeah. It's not. You spend the whole day trying to find your favorite food or whatever, because it's there's that little bit of inconvenience that goes on.
Yeah, but it's worth it.
It's worth it. Yeah, probably. Yeah. but the underlying point there, I think, is that it's a different view of the nature, isn't it? One where it's viewed as just a resource to be mined or used, and the other is where it's seen as an environment, a sacred environment you're living in and enjoying. I think you need to leave certain places open, for instance, so you've got some sense of you're in community with other life forms. If everything is developed, then there's that sense of a loss of, and it's not good enough just to have national parks, as little escape lungs. I think we need to bring this into wherever we are, this sense of the sacred, right? Because it's here and now in the everyday aspects of our lives, yes?
Yeah. I think, we, for some reason, humanity has this need to just fill every void. And so, in terms of the wheel of the year, the great void is the 13th moon, which is around, around Christmas time in December. And it's like all of nature, if we would just pay attention, all of nature is telling us to, go inside of our trees or our caves and just kind of rest and reflect. And yet all of society is telling us to go to every party and buy everything and eat all of the food and to just fill that void with whatever we can. And I think that it's only in that void, in those points of stillness, in those open spaces in nature also, where we can touch the sacred. And so if we're constantly trying to fill them, whether it's with, the Walmart stores or with a box of cookies, like whatever it is that we're trying to fill the voids with, we aren't listening and being in solitude in order to touch the sacred, because we're constantly distracting ourselves.
Right. Yeah. And so your book really has three keys to liberating this consciousness, which you call the witch within, but it could be anybody that wants to get in touch with their essential nature, right? With their true spontaneous self, as opposed to all these overlays. And they're quite fascinating, these three keys, and it sort of guides the book through its sequence. And to sum up, we'll talk more about them, but the first one is rhythm, wild rhythm. The second is ritual, and then the third one is circle. I couldn't help think of the great trinities that exist in religion and in nature. You know, the flow from the essence, the rhythm of things through our awareness of those rhythms into the community. You know, it's almost like the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha of Buddhism, you know, the teacher, the teaching, and the community, and all these things are necessary to live an integrated life, right? Like three legs on the stool, you know, you need all three before you can sit down and take your rightful place.
Right, exactly. So, you know, if you emphasize one over the other, it ends up just not serving you.
You know, I love tarot cards, and my favorite one is called the Druidcraft tarot, because it combines witchcraft and druid imagery. And all through reading your book, I was reminding of some of the images there in that deck. Again, because it's based in nature and the earth, right? And witchcraft in general is, like you said, an earth-based religion. You talk a lot in the book about getting your legs and feet muddy and dirty. And yet, when I look at your picture, though, you look like you're immaculately presented here. So you can have both. Is that what you're saying?
Well, there's no pictures of my feet, probably. So you
I was just looking at the top half of your body. Yeah.
But yeah, I think, you know, that idea of getting dirty, it's kind of along the lines of this willingness to be perceived as potentially out of control when you're embracing your wildness. So isn't necessarily actually being dirty, although I think sometimes that is required. You know, it's more about really being able to kind of relinquish our indoctrinated beliefs about what it means to be alive and spiritual and fully awake. So our participation in the wild really requires this little bit of humility and surrender, a return to what is primal. Instead of polished.
Right. Yeah. And I think that's so important because, you know, it's easy to play games with this stuff, isn't it? I mean, I know a lot of people who are on the spiritual path, sort of on the spiritual path, but it's another commodity for them. You know, they got all the right things that they do and, light the incense, have the clothes and whatnot. But really, this what we're talking about is a little deeper than that, isn't it? We can get sidetracked, if you like, by doing it a certain way. And I know you talk in the book about, you know, we can be influenced by leaders who maybe also are not so much into helping us be liberated, but into controlling us again, you know. And so we have to be very wise here to protect ourselves against that, both internally and externally, you know, playing games with this stuff.
Yeah, right, exactly. It's very easy to kind of trivialize a feminist or feminine religion because all of society tells us to do that. So we do have to be very careful about having it not just be all about crystals and oracle cards and you know, like the tools and the beauty, because it is beautiful. You know, there is a level of that. But in order to really empower it from within, it has to go much, much deeper than just that superficial kind of action. And I think that when women first get drawn to the craft or really any kind of spiritual journey where they're just a little bit more autonomous than they would have been during childhood, there is still this need to be told that they're being a good girl. And and I think that, you know, they will fall prey, as I did. You can really easily fall prey to just any spiritual mentor that seems like they know what they're doing, just because we're just craving somebody to tell us we're doing it correctly. When it's a path that's very individual and unique to the individual. So that's why I have, you know, Wild Rhythm as the first key and not one of the second or third, because it's about knowing how nature's rhythms really affect you uniquely, so that you know enough to stand on your own two feet before you start seeking community. And then that way you're less likely to be taken advantage of.
Yes, very, very good. Very important. And also, you know, trusting that, isn't it? It's not a cookie cutter thing. You know, what works for one may not work for another. So you have to trust your own guidance here. And each of us have unique ways into the infinite, if you like, or into connectedness. And they're equally valid. And you can't push this either, right? You can you can put yourself in the right place, if you like, and not just physically, but spiritually. But you can't force it to happen, right? And in my experience, the times when it has happened, when I made those epiphanies or breakthrough times, it's been very unexpected, right? So there's a humility that comes with it. It's when you let go, it seems, that you receive.
Yeah, right, exactly. I think it's common in witchcraft, but also I think probably every spiritual tradition where, you know, you wake up one morning and it's the first morning since you came to that path where you just really aren't feeling it. And you just don't feel like, I say it's just like that day where you're a regular woman and you just don't feel, you know, that in tune with the sacred. And if it's a new path, that's sometimes enough to make you feel like, oh, that's not for me, I'm going to give up. And then they completely turn their back from it. So you know, it's knowing that our calls toward the sacred, they are cyclical. And so there might be, you know, long months or even years when you're just so in it, but then you'll feel called away from it too, and that's okay. And then it doesn't necessarily mean that you know, that you're not a witch or that spiritual path was wrong. It's just that you're human and your spirituality cycle, just like everything else about you, does.
Right. Also, I think there's times when, you know, you get irritated or even angry with the path, you know, and that's part of the work. I think that means that something's going on deep within you, and your humanness, your ego perhaps is pushing against that. So even when you feel like this is a bunch of nonsense, I don't know why I'm doing this, those are probably the moments where you need to persist, right? Because something, it's, you know, we call it in Unity chemicalization. You know, it's the kriyas, they sometimes call it in the yoga circles. But the idea that there's things moving here inside of us. I remember going to an ashram in Wales for many years, and they do six pujas a day there, and it's basically a Hindu-based community. And being intensely angry, you know, just so sick of these chants and lifting up for all this energy to the gods and goddesses within the temple there, and getting furious, actually. But then I realized, you know, it was the goddess and goddesses energy, you know, in me that was... chipping away at all the various things, the ways I resist and, you know, feel judging, whatever. So, you know, after I got through it, I thought, oh, thank you so much. You know, that was awesome. I'm really glad I got angry there, because it was, you know, it was cathartic. So everything's grist for the mill, right?
Yeah, I think, you know, all of healing is about awareness and integration. So, like, if you know, I work with a lot of women, and when they find out, you know, maybe something from childhood, like a shadow or a wound or something that they hadn't thought of in a while, there's this, like, immediate rush toward, okay, I know this, how do I fix it? What do I do to fix it? Like, what's the remedy? What's the medicine? And it's like, if we look at those things as all about just, you know, awareness, and now how do I integrate it into my light of day personality, or the ego is another word for it, right? So how do I integrate that? And then what's my reaction going to be when I try to integrate it? And so anger is a really common one, you know, trying to integrate these parts of ourselves, whether it's our knowledge of our own divinity or a childhood wounding into our ego, there's always this kind of visceral reaction. And sometimes it's grief and sometimes it's rage, but it's all, you know, just a natural kind of response to ego, the ego expanding, or the middle world, as Bill Plotkin calls it, expanding and just becoming bigger.
Yes, exactly. Beautifully put. Folks, I'm with Danielle Dulski, and we're talking about her book. It's called Woman Most Wild, Three Keys to Liberating the Witch Within. And we'll look at those three keys in the second segment. But right now, tell us a little bit about how we can get in touch with you if people want to follow up on these ideas and or maybe even get the book. You have a website, right?
Yes, my website's just my name, danielledulski.com. And there's information on all of my programs and a link to order the book as well on there.
And how long has the book been out now?
It came out in May.
Uh-huh. And I'm assuming it's doing well for you?
Yes, it's doing well.
And it is a fascinating book, folks. You know, I'm a man, but I got a lot out of it because, you know, the rhythms and the rituals and the circles, I think.
Wouldn't you like to share the programs that inspire you most with audiences around the world? That's easier than ever with mobile giving. Just text Unity Radio to 72727 and help us continue offering spiritual programs that change lives. Did you know you can reach Unity's 24/7 prayer ministry online? You don't even have to give your name to know the prayers have begun for you or those you love. Someone has been praying around the clock at Silent Unity since 1890, and every request is taken into prayer for 30 days. Why not let us pray with you, too? To submit your prayer request to Silent Unity online, go to unity.org and click on prayer, or call 1-800-NOW-PRAY.
World as it is. The world is full of voices, advertising, television, politics, colleagues, family, and friends. All are too happy to tell us how to live. In all of that noise, it's easy to miss the one voice that matters, your own soul. What would happen if you could hear that voice? Imagine the clarity, confidence, and courage that would be yours and the life you could create. Join Janet Connor, best-selling author of Writing Down Your Soul, The Lotus and the Lily, and Your Soul Wants Five Things, as she and her guests explore how to hear the call of the soul and create the soul-directed life. Live Thursday at 1 p.m. Central, only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Go inside to find.
You've been listening to World Spirituality with host Reverend Paul John Roach. To learn more about Reverend Paul John Roach, visit his website, pauljohnroach.com. Or if you have questions, email him at pauljohnroach@yahoo.com. We now return to World Spirituality.
All right, welcome back to today's show. I'm with Danielle Dulski. We're talking about her new book, Woman Most Wild, and right now we want to look at the three keys to liberating the witch within, which is the rhythm, ritual, and circle. Let's talk about rhythm, first of all. What does that mean to you?
So wild rhythm is learning about, you know, these kind of norms, these witchy kind of pagan norms about the solar and lunar cycles. But then more than that, learning the way they relate to you. So there's actually kind of like a strategic inventory that I ask the reader to do, which is just to go back into your experiences, into childhood, into, you know, life chapters, if your life was like this epic novel, and look at all of the moments when you really felt like you were the most you could possibly be. And then look at, you know, in autumn, is there a common thing that happens? Are you always moving house or changing jobs or something like that in autumn? Are you always drawn to, say, campfires in autumn? So looking at, like, these patterns in terms of the seasons and then these moments of bhava or feeling mind when your body, mind, and spirit are really yoked together in the same action. Because then knowing that about yourself, like engaging in that kind of self-study, will then inform your ritual and your magic and make it that much more authentic. So you aren't just copying these kind of recommendations and universal kind of ideas that aren't really yours, that really belong to somebody else.
Yes, interesting. So it's not just about howling to the moon, though. My wife likes to howl at the moon every full moon. She calls up a friend. She's been doing it for years and just gets a cathartic feeling. But, you know, this exuberance and joy of doing that, isn't there? You know, the letting go into the rhythm of things.
Yeah, no, that's great. I think howling at the moon is an awesome practice. But no, it's not all about that.
But I can't stop her, you know. She has to do what she does, right? Why would I want to stop her anyway?
No, she must be awesome.
Well, I think so, but I'm kind of biased, you know. She's in Australia right now, so she's a long way away from me, but she's coming back the end of this week. We're going to talk about that, actually, about because we've been, you know, sabbatical together, and then she left for a work project, and sort of the balance between enmeshment and indifference, you know. You don't want to be totally enmeshed with your partner, right? But on the other hand, you don't want to be, you know, as distant, like some relationships devolve into sort of an indifference, and they live with each other, but they're not really intimate anymore.
So hopefully we can have that time.
Which is another form of that rhythm, I guess, the rhythm of relationship, you know, and allowing the other person to be themselves, you know. At the same time, you know, you have needs as well, you know. So it's a balance, isn't it? And I think that following that rhythm is always, it's a day to day work, I guess. You know that you have to be sensitive to what's going on in any particular circumstance, sort of mindful.
Right. I think, you know, we need those fallow times in every relationship like we do in every other part of our lives. So, and I would actually, sometimes I like to take it a step further and look at it like, you know, the relationship as you knew it kind of dies and then it's a rebirth. So it's like a totally new thing, even if it's with the same person. So I think like any successful long-term relationship has many deaths and rebirths, and, you know, that's not all that different from wild rhythm and the way nature cycles within you and without you.
Yes. Yeah. Excellent point. I think you're totally right. You know, I was doing a sermon on Jesus' healing miracles last Sunday, and one of the keys, there seems like seven keys to his healing practice. One of them is, you know, being down and dirty, being visceral, you know, spitting on people's eyes and you know, making mud and putting them on their eyes, or putting his fingers in people's ears, or being there, looking them deep into the soul. With, you know, it's not just about this high level, you know, bless you, my child, sort of stuff. It's it's very connected, and it's in the blood almost. You know, you have a chapter on that, don't you? The wild feminine and your blood rhythms. And of course, we know the moon influences the cycles of the tides and the menstrual system, in women. So this is not just a nice idea. This is the way it works, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah, it's the way it works, and the important piece is to really not take anybody else's advice on the way it's supposed to work for granted, and to really look at your own cycle in relationship to the moon. Because, you know, there is kind of, we were talking about like how, you know, how the power of a feminist religion can kind of get trivialized and then taken away. And one of those common ways of doing that is to like tell women that they always have to, you know, ovulate on the full moon and like bleed on the new moon and all of these other norms that they say, when that won't be true for women that have like a shorter cycle. So it can make women feel bad, you know, even though it's kind of the illusion of empowerment, it can make you feel bad when you're not matching that recommendation. So it's always about, you know, learning what's supposed to be kind of universal, but then looking at, you know, is that really true for me?
Right. Yeah, good point. You know, and since we're talking about that, you know, I think it works for men, too, in the sense that, you know, I've known some feminists, spiritual feminists who have said, oh, you're a man, you wouldn't understand, you know, and that's very disempowering to the man, because, you know, we may want to support, you know, the woman's spirituality and lift up that aspect of the goddess or whatever. But if you're told, like, this is, oh, no, you wouldn't understand because you're part of that, you know, patriarchy or whatever, then that does a disservice to all of us, actually, because it's about integration, isn't it? Not making somebody else wrong.
Yeah, and I think, you know, again, it's like less about male and female and, you know, females understanding better than men or vice versa. And it's more about that the feminine in all of us is kind of starving, because we don't have, you know, women are affected by patriarchy just as much as men are. I mean, in a different way, but just as much. So to you know, harvest and integrate these aspects of the feminine is the task of both men and women. So, it doesn't serve anybody to dismiss, you know, like, oh, a man won't understand, because, you know, we need men to understand. Nothing's going to happen until there's integration of the feminine in everybody, regardless of gender.
So let's move on to wild ritual. What do you mean by that?
So wild ritual is ritual. So you know, honoring these transitions, whether they're healing transitions or seasonal or natural lunar transitions. And then also your magic and your spellcraft, meaning your unique way of affirming your right to affect change in your world. So anyone's magic is their conversation that they're having with the world about the kind of world they want the children of the future to live in. So whenever a witch would cast a spell, what she's really doing is she's saying, you know, I have the right to handcraft the world according to my core values. So handcraft my world according to my core values. And when she's looked at her rhythms enough to know what really means a lot to her, then she's not just replicating other people's spell work or reading, you know, some kind of a recommendation for a ritual out of a book. She's able to kind of design her own, and then they're that much more meaningful for her. And then that way she'll kind of keep doing it. And that's kind of the spiritual evolution, is you're constantly drawing from your own rhythms in order to inform your ritual and your magic. So wild ritual, it isn't just ritual, it's also spellcraft and magic. But that'll mean different things to different practitioners as they, you know, the more they do it.
Right. You know, we were in Acadia National Park recently, and there's a lot of people get there, and especially on the popular east side near Bar Harbor. And we were walking in the woods, and there were these people going along, you know, talking at the top of their voice, and just not attentive to the natural cycle around the birds, the rhythms of everything. And it was, well, number one, it was irritating. Number two, once you got over that, it was, you know, I felt sorry for them, because they hadn't shut off their city mentality, if you like. I don't know if they were from the city, but you know what I'm saying, from their civilized mentality, and gone into the other world. You know, they hadn't integrated. And Luckily, there was some hiking trails on the other side of the island where there were very few people, and that was much nicer. But I find a lot of my rituals center around just simply being attentive, you know, being present to what is. You know, the dropping down into that wisdom mind and heart that you don't get to if you're constantly in your head. And, you know, unfortunately, social media and all the distractions, the Facebook, etc., you know, keep us at that level, doesn't it? It keeps us at a certain awareness, but you need to drop down into a deeper awareness if you're going to really open to the powerful energies that you're talking about here.
Right. Yeah. I mean, we don't have, you know, in our screen driven lives, we don't have a lot of time to process and reflect. And like we were saying before, like that's when you're most in tune with the sacred and these deeper energies. So you're absolutely right. Like we need, and for a lot of people that requires solitude. And I know that, you know, different lived experiences kind of, you know, make it kind of impossible to be alone for long periods of time. But yeah, you know, solitude in nature, I think, is kind of the quickest way. Like if there is a fast track to the sacred, being alone and surrounded by nature is the easiest way to get in touch with this sense of the ethereal or the sacred, or, you know, kind of checking in with your soul's contract without really knowing what that is yet, and surrendering to this sense of the mystery. Being alone in nature is the best way I know to do that.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, you'd
be maybe with somebody who won't talk.
Right. Yeah, there we go. But, you know, many traditions, of course, emphasize that point, you know, whether it be the forest monks of Buddhism or the, you know, the sages of India went into the forest, or the vision quest of, you know, the first peoples and whatnot, and what Bill Plotkin does in his work, you know, taking people out into the wilderness. It's all the same energies we're talking about, right? Getting in touch with something other than the built environment, other than seeing faces of humans all the time. It's good to see the faces of other parts of creation, whether that be the face of a tree or the face of an animal or an insect. You know, it's introducing us to something other than ourselves. And this is a hugely important, I think, isn't it? Because there's more going on. The god or the goddess creates a multiplicity of forms, you know, and each one is for our delight, you know, and our reverence. So, It's good to be in that environment.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I love that, you know, we have to be able to see something other than ourselves, is what you said. And like, so if you live in a relatively built environment like I do, you know, the seeing buildings and people is good, but it isn't that particular and necessary spiritual nourishment that you get from being alone in nature.
And
you know, like those people that were in the forest and kind of not paying attention to it, it becomes easier to forget, I think, the more we're removed from nature. And so if we are to come to this point where we do realize we need to save our planet, then, you know, more people need to do that. Like, they need to remember. And we think of it as a relatively easy thing to go into nature and be alone and kind of check in. But and yet we don't do it very often.
Right. Exactly. Talking about earlier, we talked about, you know, anger and those things that come up can be helpful to us if they're used wisely. The same with the goddess, right? I like the Hindu idea that, you know, the goddess can be in a benign form, but also in a ferocious form. We're thinking of, say, Durga, the goddess Durga, as opposed to Parvati, you know, this mm-hmm. benign goddess figure, you know, providing everything. Annapurna, the goddess of food, whatever. And then there's this, the Kali image, you know, where it's all these skulls, this necklace of skulls and people being poured out of her mouth and everything, the goddess of destruction, right? But both these elements are part of what it means to be alive. It's part of that conundrum, that paradox of being on planet Earth.
Right. It's all the, you know, the death, birth, death cycle. And I think that, you know, that lighter form of the goddess, the Parvati form of the goddess, is much more palatable. And so, you know, a lot of women that are coming to, whether it's witchcraft or another kind of, you know, goddess tradition, they'll go there first, the kind of like accessible, palatable, you know, priestess-like aspect of the feminine, but they'll still kind of shy away from that long fanged dark goddess archetype, like, you know, Kali or Durga. So you know, but we do need both. So the darker goddess, you know, that's the magic and the intuition and the death mysteries and the blood mysteries and all of those aspects of the dark feminine that are still very much socially oppressed. And, you know, I think that that's kind of the next frontier, is we do have a lot of women who are rising up and you know, embracing the goddess, but it's kind of that more palatable form of the goddess, and we need it to just go a little bit deeper if we're going to affect change. Because, you know, in terms of the goddess of destruction, like, she does kind of break down these outmoded systems, these parts of our world that are no longer working. So, you know, whether that's politics or institutionalized oppression or something like that, you know, it's that dark goddess force of destruction that we need to really call forth and embrace now.
Now I understand what's going on politically in the United States. Thank you for that.
There yeah.
has to be some redeeming value here. Anyway, this is not a political show, so we're not going to talk about that.
We only have a few
more minutes. So let's just briefly talk about the circle. It's good to have community, but also you have to be wise about community, right? You don't want to just be subsumed into a dogmatic approach, right? You have to maintain your own integrity.
Right. That's exactly it. I think, you know, when you find your circle, it's, you know, never feeling disempowered. So if your circle ever for one second makes you feel like you're less than any other member, then it's time to find another one. And the importance of the circle is value comes from putting the magic and the mystery alongside the mundane. So being able to have these kind of normal conversations about, you know, vacations and you know, trips to the doctor and that kind of stuff alongside spellcraft or whatever the practice of magic is everything, because then it's not just your spirituality is another layer that's kind of slathered on top of the rest of your life like icing. It really becomes more integrated when you can weave the magic and the mundane together within a circle.
Yes, I love that. I remember one time I was in a ritual, a puja or whatever, and I came out and the guru was talking about the cows that needed to be fed and whatever, and all the business of the farm mm-hmm. on which this ashram was. And I thought, oh my God, we've just been in this exalted level, and now he's talking about these totally irrelevant things. This is terrible, terrible. And of course, now looking at it, I realized, you know, I was the terrible one, because I'd separated, you know, the spiritual from the physical. And it was perfectly fine, you know, to have a beautiful ritual to the gods and goddesses, and then talk about the cows, because, you know, it's all one anyway. But, you know, that's where you can be so yeah. wrong, you know, when you're intent upon making it special. You know, it's a special feeling mm-hmm. or whatever. And special is just in the ordinary, everyday processes of our lives, right?
Right, yeah. It's so much easier to kind of compartmentalize your spiritual practice and make it completely separate from everything else. Like, I think that's kind of like a natural, almost human instinct. Like, let's just put it in a little box and we'll take it out when we want to play with it.
Yeah, exactly.
We'll put it back again. And yeah, that's not, that, you know, that doesn't end up serving you in the long run.
All right, final question. Tell us, what is a wolf woman?
So, wolf woman is an archetype for the integrated holistic feminine, or the integrated primal feminine, meaning maiden, mother, crone, or triple goddess. Or if you don't like the names maiden, mother, crone, or triple goddess, you don't have to use those, because really they're just they're names, they're labels for these aspects of the feminine that have been suppressed. So maiden meaning our sensuality and our connection to nature and our emotionally cyclical nature that's really lower chakra, so our right to be here and our right to feel. And then mother, the kind of generative creatrix whose solar plexus, heart and throat chakra, so she honors her right to act and love and speak and be heard. And then crone, which is probably the most socially denigrated aspect of the feminine, and that's our right to see in the dark, so the intuitive feminine, and then our right to know and explore spiritual systems for ourselves and kind of take what we like and leave what we don't. So wolf woman is the integrated feminine, rather than our society tends to overvalue the mother, because the mother's really good for capitalism because she's constantly producing something. But the maiden and the crone are less valuable. So the wolf woman kind of realizes that and tries to integrate all these different aspects of the feminine into her light of day personality.
Yeah, the kind of maiden gets exploited and the crone gets denigrated, right? We see it every day reading the paper and watching the news. So, yeah, okay. Very good. So can I join in the wolf cry as a wolf man?
Absolutely.
Wolf man
more
think,
wild
does
man.
It? Wolf man has a whole lot of another connotation altogether, unfortunately. Yeah. But to go back to the true wolf consciousness, you know, which it follows the pack and yet is also individual. It's an interesting balance again, isn't it? Coming back to that balance, that harmony.
Thank you for tuning in to World Spirituality with Reverend Paul John Roach. Join us every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Central to further examine the spiritual teachings and religious traditions of our world and to discover the universal truth principles present in all. World Spirituality, only on UnityOnlineRadio.org, the voice of an awakening world. This program is brought to you in part by Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas, celebrating the Christ Spirit in all people. Online at www.unityfortworth.org. Like life, grief is a journey, not a destination. Whether it is loss of life, relationship, security, or simply the process of change, have you given yourself permission to begin your journey of grief? Have you yielded to the gift of grace? Join Reverend Chaz Wesley every Thursday at 5 p.m. Central on a virtual navigation from grief to grace, and explore new horizons of empowerment, significance, and support. Only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
I'll light a candle in your name.
To paraphrase Einstein, I can't solve a problem at the level of the problem. The world's great religions tell us to treat others as we would like to be treated. Remembering that thought makes it a little easier for me to become a peacemaker, a bringer of love when conflict appears. When I choose to be a peacemaker, a loving response or sometimes silence replaces the snappy comeback to an unkind statement directed my way. The momentary satisfaction of winning an argument gives way to the deeper satisfaction of helping to create a more peaceful world. A world where destructive conflict no longer has a place. Peace really can begin with me.
To find a Unity Church near you, please visit our website at www.unity.org.
Every moment we live can be holy, and all we need to do to experience that state is to make the decision to do so. Everything we do can be a prayer, and by using our innate creativity with intention, in every aspect of our lives, that can indeed be true. Author Carla Kincannon wrote, "Creativity is so much more than art making. It is a tool for navigating through everyday experiences to find the sacred in each God-given moment." Discover Creative Spirit, Wednesdays at 4 p.m. Central Time, and experience the joy of connecting to spirit through creative expression.
Be sure to grab the latest issue of Unity Magazine and read the interview with Ram Dass, the iconic spiritual leader of the 60s. He's now focused on how to age consciously. Spiritual author Thomas More reflects on grumpy old men and women. And Barbara Bowen writes a touching story about her experience as a caregiver to her mother with dementia. To subscribe to Unity Magazine, go to unity.org and click on Publications.
Weather forecasters can provide guesstimates based on scientific data, but in the end, we cannot know with absolute certainty what the weather will be until we live it. Life works the same way. We may think we know what's going to happen, expecting the best while preparing for the worst. We can keep a positive frame of mind and weather any storm because we are one with the ever-present, miracle-working power of God. We are mightier than any circumstance on this earth because we are divine in nature and a part of the eternal. We live in a world where we can realize our possibilities because we know that with God, all things are possible. And the way to keep our hearts and minds centered and focused on divine potentialities is through prayer. As author Frances W. Foulkes wrote in her book, Effectual Prayer, "If the time of achievement seems long, pray. If the way seems dark, pray. If the results seem delayed, pray. Morning, noon, and night, pray. Pray without ceasing."
This mindful moment is brought to you by Daily Word Magazine. For more than 90 years, Daily Word has helped people of all faiths live healthy, prosperous, and meaningful lives. Take advantage of our 30-day free trial of the digital edition. You'll receive access to the online magazine, a daily email with the word for the day, and the Daily Word app. To sign up for the 30-day free trial, visit unityonlineradio.org/dailyword.
Are you ready to experience the rich interconnection of spirituality, orientation, and identity? If so, plan to attend Liberating Your Divine Identity, a retreat at Unity Village during Pride Month, June 9th to the 12th. This soul-filled retreat is facilitated by LGBTQIA+ Unity ministers, with workshops and ceremonies to cultivate a deeper awareness of our spiritual nature. Register at unityvillage.org/IAmDivine2022.